chapter 14, verses 1 through 24. Last weekend, several of you guys were at our house. We had this annual Christmas open house, so a lot of folks were there. And the culmination of that night is where we do this white elephant gift exchange or Yankee swap or whatever you call it, where everybody gets a number. And it's numbered 1 through how many people are there. And then in order, somebody picks a present and opens it. You guys know how this works. And then the next person can either steal that person's present if they want it, or they can take their chances and pick from another unopened present. And it goes on like that. Well, the last person that goes in that game is in the best position because they're looking at everything that's been opened. So they get to pick exactly what they want. They see it all. Now, the bummer about that is you've got somebody towards the end that is sitting there without a present for the time that the game takes, and the game takes a while. So you're having to wait, but then it pays off at the end. But you get to pick from all of these different Christmas presents. You get to pick the best item. Well, that's sort of the idea that Jesus is telling us about in our passage this morning. He talks about it with seeking recognition. And so in this passage, he's telling us that seeking recognition from the world in this life, he compares that, contrasts it to seeking recognition from God at Jesus' future return. Well, we won't read the entire passage up front, but we'll read sort of the central verse, and it's chapter 14, verse 11. And Jesus says this, "For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." Well, this entire passage, the reason we're treating it all together, it all takes place in one setting. So the beginning of this passage, Jesus has gone over to a Pharisee's house to have supper with this Pharisee and some of his friends. And this passage is about what happens when he's there. So basically, he performs a miracle. That's the first thing that happens. And then he tells us two parables. Well, first, look at the miracle. Verse 1. One Sabbath, when Jesus went to dine at the house of a ruler of the Pharisees, they were watching him carefully. And behold, there was a man before him who had dropsy. This is funny because dropsy is an illness that I joke about anyway. Dropsy isn't really around anymore. It's severe stomach trouble. That's what dropsy is. So he shows up at this guy's house. There's a guy there who has this sickness, who has this ailment. Now, remember what we saw last week, if you were here. So the Pharisees had added all these extra requirements to God's law. That's something the Pharisees had done, something that they were good at. Well, one law they added a bunch of extra stuff to was the Sabbath command in the Old Testament, which was the command to keep Saturday off limits from work. So the Old Testament, God's people in the Old Testament were commanded to rest on that 24-hour period, to rest on Saturday. It's called the Sabbath. And so the Pharisees, they had added all these extra rules to the Sabbath command about what people could do and what they couldn't do. And so that's a situation where they're always watching Jesus. If it's a Saturday, the people that don't like Jesus are always watching him closely to see if he will break one of these particular extra commands that they've heaped up on the Sabbath command, so they could try and sort of bust him on it, right? It's what our kids do with one another, where they keep an eye on one another, see if somebody steps out of line. So that's what they're doing here. Well, look at verse 3. And Jesus responded to the lawyers and the Pharisees, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. Then he took him and healed him and sent him away. So Jesus doesn't care what these Pharisees think about what he's doing. We see this theme in Jesus's ministry. Jesus cares about what one person thinks, and it's his Father. It's the Lord. Doesn't care what anybody else thinks, and so he performs this miracle. Now look at what he says in verse 5. And he said to them, "Which of you, having a son or an ox that has fallen into a well on a Sabbath day, will not immediately pull him out?" And they could not reply to these things. So just like we saw last week, in our passage last week, Jesus points out that the Pharisees are being hypocritical because they heap up all these extra commands. They make it sound like you can't do anything, can't lift a finger on the Sabbath. But then, of course, they themselves break their own rule because they spend time feeding themselves. They spend time feeding their animals. We saw that last week. If one of their children or an animal falls in a ditch, they'll pull it out on a Saturday. So Jesus points this out to them. And in fact, this is exactly what Jesus is doing here. He's saving one of his children. The very thing they would do on the Sabbath, that's what Jesus is doing. So his supper with this Pharisee, it gets off to a bit of a rocky start, right? But again, Jesus doesn't care what these Pharisees think about him. And what becomes clear from the two parables that follow, the two parables in the rest of this passage, is that these Pharisees are different from Jesus in this way. They care a lot about what people think about them. They want recognition. Well, look at the first parable Jesus tells us here in verse 7. That's sort of the setup, and now here's the parable Jesus gives. Now, he told a parable to those who were invited when he noticed how they chose the places of honor, saying to them, "When you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by him, and he who invited you both will come and say to you, 'Give your place to this person,' and then you will begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, move up higher.' Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." So the reason Jesus tells this first parable is because he notices something about the way the Pharisees' guests have chosen their seats. So verse 7 again, it says, "Now he told a parable to those who were invited when he noticed how they chose the places of honor." So in this culture, in the first century Near East, in this part of the world, this time in history, it was a big deal where you sat at a party. It was basically based on status. And that's what's happening here. It's a wedding reception. So it's a really significant, one of the more important types of get-togethers. Well, where you sat was extremely important in this culture. It showed your social status. So the more important you were, the closer to the head of the table you sat. And the less important you were, the further away from the head of the table you sat. Well, Jesus notices that all the guys at this dinner party, they're trying to get the most honorable seats. So everybody comes in, and that's what they're doing right away. They're trying to sit in the seats where important people would sit. And the reason for this isn't rocket science, right? It's simple. Humans are designed to desire recognition. That's the first thing we see in this passage. Humans are designed to desire recognition. That's why these guys wanted the seats of honor, because they're designed to desire recognition. And you are designed that way too. And I'm designed that way. So this is a question, is have you noticed this about yourself? Have you noticed that you desire recognition? Have you noticed that when you're doing something well and someone notices that and tells you you're doing it well, have you noticed that that situation feels immediately good in a way where if you do something good and nobody sees it, it does not feel as immediately good? There are certain feelings that accompany that first situation. When you do something good and people notice it, they recognize it, right? That's why it's easy to try and do good works when other people are around to see them. That's a thing that most of us do. It's because we want recognition. We want people to appreciate us. We want people to value us. Now, each of us, and this is the trouble, right? As you get older, you get better at covering this up. You get better at trying to make it appear that you don't care that somebody saw you do this good thing. But of course, the Lord knows what's going on in your heart. You know what's going on in your heart. We know that oftentimes we set up these situations where somebody can see us do this good thing. But think about yourself before you had gotten good at covering this up. Think about yourself as a child. And if you can remember, think about how as a child, how you just hungered after recognition, how you wanted recognition from your parents and from your teachers and from your peers. And if you can't remember that far back, just think about the kids that you know now. This is what they do, right? So this is why Annie will stand in the kitchen and she will figure out a different way to stand on one leg or to bend down and put her head on the kitchen floor. And she calls us to watch her to see what she's done. This is what our children do, right? They want recognition. And we are no different. And the reason that we all want recognition is because we were designed for that. We were designed to desire recognition. And what that means is that impulse you have to seek recognition, that desire is actually a good thing. It's easy for us to think, okay, this leads to sin, so it must be a bad thing. It's not. The desire for recognition, it's actually a good thing. Look at what Jesus tells his followers to do in verse 10. He says, "But when you are invited to this meal, go and sit in the lowest place." Now, this part isn't a surprise, right? Jesus wants us to be humble. He wants us to sit in the least important place. Anybody in the world could probably tell you, oh, yeah, that's what he's going to say to do. Don't sit in the important seat. Sit in the humble spot. But look at the reason he tells us to sit in the humble spot. Verse 10, but when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place so here's the reason for it, when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. So Jesus says the reason you're sitting in the bad seat is so that the host will move you up, so that you'll end up in the good seat, in the honorable seat. Look at the end of verse 10. Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you. So in this verse, Jesus tells us explicitly to seek recognition. That's what he's telling you to do here. Seek recognition, seek honor. And Jesus knows this is a good thing because it's what we were created by God to do. We're created for this, with this desire for recognition. It's a good desire. In fact, listen, if I haven't sold you, listen to Romans chapter 2, verse 7. This is what we're told there. To those who by patience and well-doing seek for glory and seek for honor and seek for immortality, to those people, God will give eternal life. So in Romans 2, the Lord says, salvation is only for those who are, in this particular way, seeking glory and honor. So we're supposed to do it. It's a good thing to do. Look at the last thing Jesus says in verse 11. And he who humbles himself will be exalted. Exaltation is just a synonym for recognition, right? That's what he's telling us to do here. So he says that we want to be exalted. There's this promise we have of being exalted. So Jesus says the desire we have for recognition, it's a good thing. It's from the Lord. We were designed to desire recognition. But here's the problem. And there's always a problem with sinners, right? The Lord gives us a good thing. We mess it up. It's what he does, gives us a good thing. That's what we do. We mess it up. Although we were designed to desire recognition, here's what we get it wrong. We seek it from the wrong places, and we seek it at the wrong time. The two places we get it wrong. This is when our desire for recognition becomes sinful, when we're seeking it from the wrong places and at the wrong time. In terms of timing, we want it now. We want instant recognition. We want it immediately. Verse 7, now he told a parable to those who were invited when he noticed how they chose the places of honor. So these folks, they choose the seats of honor as soon as they walk in. It's the first thing that they do. They wanted recognition now. They didn't want to wait for the payoff. They wanted the honor immediately. And this resistance to waiting, this is not unique to the Pharisees. This is not unique to their friends here in the story. All humans have a hard time waiting on a payoff, right? That's why people play the lottery. People want a payoff right now. It's why athletes demand signing bonuses, right? They don't want to wait for the season to start making money. They want that money now up front. It's why credit card companies do so well. They do really well. I don't know if you knew that. Credit card companies do well. There's a lot of them, right? They capitalize on this. The fact that people want things immediately. We don't want to wait. We want immediate payoffs. It's why Netflix put video rental stores out of business, right? Which I don't want to talk about because I don't like that. I love Netflix. I don't like the idea that my kids will never be in a video rental store. That's not in the manuscript. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's because we like immediate payoffs, right? This is what humans do. And recognition's no different. We want honor and praise now. But what Jesus tells us to do is to wait. Verse 10, but when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you. So Jesus tells us that for the Christian, in terms of recognition, there's a payoff coming, but it's not here yet. That's why he uses that word, then. Then you will be honored. That's not an immediate word. That's a future word. So there's a payoff coming, but it's not here yet. And so for now, to use Jesus' illustration, for now we're supposed to sit in the lowest place. We're supposed to hold off on seeking recognition now. And just so we're clear, when Jesus tells us not to seek it now, he's not talking about just today or next week or next year. It's not like, okay, spend the first 2 years of your Christian life holding off, and then, you know, when you're in year three, then's the payoff. Then you can start seeking recognition. We know this because of a detail we find in the next parable. Look at verse 12 of our chapter. And Jesus says this. He said also to the man who had invited him, When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also invite you and in return, and you be repaid. So, real quick, this is a different parable. It's illustrating the same lesson. So, Jesus is talking about a situation where you might invite someone over to your house just so they will feel compelled to then invite you over to their house. So, maybe if you know somebody that has like a swimming pool and you don't, and so you say, hey, you should come over to our house and we can shoot the breeze and have fun. And you're doing that because you're hoping they will then turn around and invite you to their swimming pool house. That sort of thing. That's what he's talking about here. So again, Jesus is saying, listen, you're not supposed to be looking for an immediate payoff. So don't set up a situation where that's going to happen. Now look at what he says we're waiting for. So we don't have the payoff yet, but this is what shows us when this thing is coming, when this payoff is coming for Christians. End of verse 14. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. So this is what Jesus tells us we're waiting for. This is when he says the payoff will come. He tells us to wait on our recognition until the resurrection of the just. This is the event of Jesus' second coming. It's the thing Jesus was telling his followers about from the moment he left them. After he's resurrected, he spends some time with them, and he starts telling them, he says, hey, I'm going to go away to be with the Father. That's why Jesus isn't here right now, right? He's with the Father. So he says he's going to go away, but then he's going to return one day. Jesus' second coming, the second incarnation. That's what we're waiting on. And that's what Jesus tells us to wait on before we'll receive the recognition that we're looking for. So tomorrow, Monday, it's okay if your spouse doesn't know that you are right about something that you are right about. Right? Imagine that. I know it's a huge travesty, right? Huge travesty. When I'm right about something and Maria thinks I'm wrong, and then I feel that tension because she doesn't yet know how right I am. It does not happen much. But that's okay, isn't it? So let's say that you're in the shoes of somebody who is typically right. Your spouse doesn't know that you're right. It's okay. It's okay if that happens tomorrow. It's okay if your boss doesn't recognize how hard you worked on a project. That's okay. It's okay if your friend is mad at you for having a difficult conversation with him or her, and they think that you had that conversation because of bad motives in your own heart, and you know your motivation was good. That's okay if they think that, if they're misjudging you in that way. All of that is okay because Jesus tells us our recognition isn't supposed to be immediate anyway, the way that we oftentimes want it to be. So we seek our recognition at the wrong time. We want it now, but the Lord tells us it's not coming, at least fully, until Christ returns. But second, we seek it from the wrong places. Look at the second half of verse 14 again. He says, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. So this is what we're waiting on, the resurrection. Now, who do you think will be doing the paying on that day? Well, it's obviously the Lord. The Lord is the one that gives to us what we will receive on that day when Christ returns. Just like we read a minute ago in Romans 2:6, God will render to each one according to his works. To those who by patience and well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, he will give eternal life. So God is the one who will reward us on the final day. In fact, think about the way Jesus says it in Matthew 25. So on that future day to the Christian, God will say, well done, my good and faithful servant. That's recognition language, isn't it? He's telling us, well done, you did good. But it's not recognition from your spouse or from your kids or from your boss or from your friends. It's recognition from the Lord. So think about it this way. Aren't you okay with the fact that you would take your car into your mechanic to get it fixed? And let's say that you have a tooth that needs to have a crown put on it. Aren't you okay that your mechanic can't put that crown on your tooth? That's probably a thing that you're okay with. Aren't you okay where when you take your kids to the pediatrician, you take your kid to the pediatrician and the pediatrician doesn't teach your kids how to read better during that time? That's a thing that you're okay with. Now, your doctor could be a personal friend. Where, yeah, maybe she spends some time reading to your kids when she's over at your house. That can happen. You could have a mechanic that could put a crown on a tooth, right? But the reason you're not disappointed is because you don't expect it. Because you don't go to your mechanic to get a crown put on your tooth, right? That's not where you go to get those things done. So why are we so upset when the people around us aren't giving us the recognition we want? That's not where we're designed to get our recognition, is it? So why do we get so caught up on that? Why does it ruin our day if another sinner doesn't give us the honor we think we deserve? You know, other people are not supposed to be your primary source of recognition, or mine. The Lord is. So we're designed to have recognition. That desire is from the Lord. It's not a bad thing. But where we get off track is we seek recognition at the wrong time, and we seek it from the wrong place. We seek it immediately and from other people, instead of at the resurrection in the future and from the Lord. Now, most of us understand this, right? I think most of us know we put too much stock in what other people think about us. We know that we're trying to get too much fulfillment out of this life instead of putting our hope in Jesus' return. But here's the temptation. We know that, but then I think most of us just try to do both things. And this is what I do all the time. So I try and keep the majority of my hope in Jesus' return. But then I also think to myself, well, okay, what's the big deal if I split the hope a little bit, right? I mean, like, let's say on a good day, let's say 75% in Jesus' return, but 25% in now. That's not bad, right? That's the way that I think about it, just sort of splitting that hope. You know, what's the big deal if I'm seeking recognition from the Lord for the future, but also seeking just a little bit of recognition from my boss now, or from my spouse now, or from my peers now? Well, the problem with that, Jesus says, is that this recognition category, it's not in the both and category. You can't seek it here and seek it from the Lord. No, it's in the either or category. There's a dichotomy here. We have to pick. So in other words, Jesus tells us it's not an option to have a life where we are seeking recognition from other people in this life and seeking recognition from God at the second coming. We have to pick one or the other. Let's look at the details of this first parable more closely. Look back at verse 8. Jesus says, "When you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by him. And he who invited you both will come and say to you, 'Give your place to this person.' And then you will begin with shame to take the lowest place." So again, this first scenario, Jesus talks about what will happen to the one who gets to the wedding reception and immediately takes one of the honorable seats. What will happen is someone more honorable will come in the scenario, and the groom will have to come to you and say, "Hey, I'm sorry, I know this is embarrassing, but you're going to have to move down to the end of the table because this other person is more important than you." And so they need to sit in this seat. So that's an embarrassing scenario, right? It's something that we want to avoid. This is the first scenario Jesus gives in the parable. Now look at the second, verse 10. "But when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, move up higher.' Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you." So second scenario, Jesus talks about, okay, but if you go and sit at the dishonorable part of the table, then the host will come to you and say, "Hey, you need to move up closer." And that's an honoring thing. That's a thing where you receive recognition. You're moving to this better spot. But the significant thing to notice here is Jesus only gives those two options, right? There's not a third one. He doesn't say, "So play it safe and sit right in the middle," where maybe the host will bump you up, but even if he doesn't, at least you're in the middle. There's no third option here. He only gives two. When you walk into the reception, you can either try to get an honorable seat or you can sit down in one of the dishonorable seats. Look at verse 12, this second parable. "He said also to the man who invited him, 'When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just." Now, right off the bat, we need to see the kind of love that Jesus wants us to have for other people. So there's all sorts of verses like this in the Bible because this is something that Jesus is really interested in. The type of love he wants us to have towards others is a sacrificial love. So that's a love where you put yourself in a position where you know you will not come out on top. You will end up with a deficit, with less than you started with, not necessarily monetarily, right, but maybe time or maybe honor in particular situations. You're giving yourself to somebody else. So you don't just invite the person to lunch that you love hanging out with. You can certainly do that, and we do, and that's fine. But recognize that doesn't take any sacrifice, because you know you're going to end up above the mark there. You're gaining something because you enjoy being with this person, right? The way Jesus describes it here, you're getting a payment for that time. But Jesus says to do the opposite. He says to love people who can't repay us, to care for people and to be sacrificial in that way where we know we won't come out on top. That's the fullest kind of love because it's sacrificial, right? At least for now, we don't get paid off in this life. And this is what Jesus tells us to remember. You know, when you spend time serving someone, when they're not going to be able to repay you in this life, it just means you're going to be repaid in the next life. Verse 14, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection. So this is something to remember when you're pondering a situation. Should I love this person in this way? This is going to be hard for me. You know, I'm not going to get as much out of it as I could if I didn't serve them. Well, in those situations, we just need to remember God will repay us. And he's far more generous than anybody we know here. So this is the type of love Jesus tells us to have. But again, the main thing that we see here is that when it comes to recognition, Jesus only gives us two options, right? So you can either set up your life in such a way where you're seeking to be repaid here and now, or you can set up your life in such a way where you're not seeking repayment now, but from the Lord when Jesus returns. It's like I've mentioned before about Chick-fil-A. When you go in Chick-fil-A, they're well-trained. So the first thing they'll ask you is for your name. The second thing is they'll ask for here or to go because they need to know how to set up the order, right? If they asked you that, so what they mean is, are you going to eat here in the restaurant or are you going to take it out of the restaurant? If you said neither, well, they would look at you like you're crazy because what other option is there? You can either eat in the restaurant or out of the restaurant. It's an either or. You can't do a third option. Well, that's what Jesus is talking about here, our pursuit of recognition. We can either seek it from the Lord in the future at the resurrection or seek it from the world now. Now, this obviously doesn't mean that we have to be perfect at this. So if that was the message, then we would all just be brokenhearted because none of us can do this perfectly, right? None of us can only seek recognition from Jesus for every second of our life. That's because we're sinners. And Jesus knows that. He knows how weak we are. He knows us better than we know ourselves. But what he's talking about here is when it comes to seeking recognition is the overall direction of our hearts, the overall direction of our lives. So when Jesus gives us these two options, it's not that the person who's seeking recognition from God will never, ever seek recognition from the world. But again, it's that the overall direction of our heart is headed towards him. So you could think about it like an interstate. So if you went down to Portland this afternoon and you're headed back up to Bangor and you're going north on 95, well, you know that interstate runs north. But if you had a compass, there'd be moments where when you looked at that compass, you're on I-95 north. But if you look at that compass, there's going to be moments where you're going east and where you're going west. There's even moments where you're going south. And you might think to yourself, well, how does that work, right? I'm on 95 north. So if you were somebody that had never been on an interstate before, I'm on I-95 north, and yet this says that I'm going south. That's how the Christian life works, right? Of course there's setbacks. Of course there's sin. Of course there's times where we're seeking recognition from the world. But it's when you zoom out, and you can do this with 95. If you zoomed out on a map, it'd be really clear. Oh, it's headed north. That's the same thing Jesus is talking about here. It's what our life is supposed to look like in terms of who we're seeking our recognition from. So in this way, there's only two directions. Even though we try to do both, Jesus is telling us, no, you have to pick a direction. You can either spend this life trying to sit in the honorable seat, or you can be fine to spend this life sitting in the dishonorable seat. It's either or. And the reason this is such a significant fact is because of where those two choices lead. So verse 11, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. So Jesus says, hey, spending this life trying to be recognized, trying to gain honor, trying to gain exaltation, that will lead to humiliation, he says. And the reverse is true also. Spending this life not seeking honor and recognition will lead to exaltation. And again, this is what will happen at Jesus' return. Verse 14, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. So the one who seeks their recognition from God at the final judgment will receive compensation from the Lord, and that will make it worth it. But the one who isn't interested in that, who isn't interested in recognition from God, that's the one who we saw in our passage last week. Chapter 13, verse 27, who will hear Jesus say, "Depart from me." So there's no middle ground here. In Jesus' eyes, we can either be characterized as seeking future recognition from the Lord or immediate recognition from the world. So to sum this up again, we have this desire for recognition. It's not going away. It's created in us. We're created in the image of God. You can't get rid of it. And it's a good thing on its own, but we skew it. Instead of looking for recognition from God at Christ's second coming, we look for it immediately now from the world. And the problem with that is it's either or. We can't have both. So if we spend our life seeking honor from the world, then God's not going to honor us on the last day. And so the question for us is, okay, well, how do we do with this? You know, as Christians, how do we do with seeking recognition? Are we seeking it from the Lord or from people in this world now? So to get back to Jesus' analogy, are you trying to sit in the honorable seat in this life? Or are you fine to sit in the dishonorable seat? So, you know, practically, how much of your time is taken up with worrying about what other people think about you? It's a good question to think about. How significant is that time? You're worrying what other people think about you. How often do you get upset that in your estimation, you haven't gotten the recognition that you deserve at work or at church or in your family? Well, the last thing Jesus does here is to make it clear how much better God's recognition is than the world's recognition. So in other words, Jesus is telling us not to settle for immediate worldly recognition. Future recognition from the Lord is far better. And this is the last thing that we'll look at this morning. And two main reasons why recognition from God is better than recognition from the world. And one reason it's better is it will last longer. So think again about this wedding reception analogy. So this life is the seat that you're sitting in just until the groom sees what's going on. So you come in, you immediately sit down in this seat. It doesn't take long before the meal starts and the groom says, "Ooh, I need him to move. I need her to move." That's this life. It's that tiny amount of time. Our future life, eternity, is the actual meal where we're sitting there, the rest of the reception. So that's a good thing for us to remember. This life is short. We're just waiting for the meal to start. Verse 10, "But when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, move up higher.' Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." So basically what he's saying is, yeah, you can figure out a way to get lots of honor in this life. All of us know how to do this. We know how to work our lives in a way where it looks impressive to other people. We could get that. But even if you get it, how long is it going to last? Like a few decades, right? That's it. And then it's gone. This time of year when we're driving around to see Christmas lights, we did this the other night, we have 1,000 children. And so we don't have 1,000 children. We have 4 children. But when we're driving past something and one of us sees, oh, there's Santa Claus on that roof, and we'll point it out to the kids, there's always going to be one kid that missed it, which is a bummer, right? Causes some trouble. But it makes sense, doesn't it? Because we're driving past, right? So you can look, and you see it for a second, and then it's gone. That's this earthly life. Feels long because we're in the middle of it right now. It's not long. It's looking at Christmas lights when you're driving past, and then it's done. Our life is fast. Even if we can accrue this honor that we want, it's not going to last. So Jesus tells us, don't settle for immediate worldly recognition. It doesn't last. But second, even if it did last, it's not nearly as good as God's recognition. The quality of God's recognition is infinitely better than anything this world has to offer. Look at the picture we're given in verse 15. "When one of those who reclined at table with him heard these things, he said to him, 'Blessed is everyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of God.' But he said to him, 'A man once gave a great banquet and invited many.'" This is a picture that's regularly employed in the Bible to talk about what it will be like for God's people to be with him one day for all eternity. It's like this huge, wonderful meal. Oftentimes, that's the comparison that's made. That's the illustration we're given. So Graham read this passage earlier, but listen again. Isaiah 25, verse 6. On this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wine, of rich food full of marrow, of aged wine well refined. So you can think about the best meal that you have ever had and the best company that you have ever had a meal with. Well, that's a small picture of how good God's presence will be. And the alternative is like eating moldy leftovers by yourself. All right? You think about the worst meal that you've ever had. Worldly recognition just isn't as good. But of course, a lot of people make that trade-off. They don't seek the Lord, and they're interested in what this world has to offer. Look at verse 17. So Jesus invites folks to this feast. This is what happens. And at that time for the banquet, he sent his servant to say to those who had been invited, "Come, for everything is now ready." But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said to him, "I have bought a field, and I must go out and see it. Please have me excused." And another said, "I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to examine them. Please have me excused." And another said, "I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come." And this is the story of mankind, right? We're offered a banquet with the Lord, but we reject it for lesser things. That's what we do. And if you're here and you're a Christian, then this was your story as well. There was a time where you were outright rejecting this meal, where you were rejecting the Lord. And in fact, the only reason that you have changed your mind about that, the only reason you're interested in the Lord now, is because Jesus went out and got you. So in this parable, when people reject the meal, look at what happens. Verse 21, "So the servant came and reported these things to his master. Then the master of the house became angry and said to his servant, 'Go out quickly to the streets and lanes of the city and bring in the poor and crippled and blind and lame.' And the servant said, 'Sir, what you commanded has been done, and still there is room.' And the master said to the servant, 'Go out to the highways and hedges and compel people to come in, that my house may be filled.'" And that's you. And that's me. So if you're a Christian, you're one of these poor, crippled, blind, and lame people that Jesus came and got. So verse 21 says he brought you. Verse 23 said he compelled you. So the only reason you ever decided to follow the Lord is because Jesus brought you in. Because he gave you eyes to see how good the Lord is. And so when you found out your sin could be covered by simply trusting in Jesus, simply by trusting in his work on the cross, that was an easy decision to make if you're here and you're a Christian. Because Jesus brought you in. But of course, the challenge for us now is that we've seen how good he is, but we still struggle and settle for immediate worldly recognition. So the people in this parable, they have a lot of excuses for why they can't come to God's banquet. Of course, we do the same thing, you know? God, I can't wait on your future recognition because I really want some from my career now. I just need this fulfillment now. So I'm going to put that off. Or, Lord, I can't wait for your future recognition because I really just need approval from my spouse or from my family. So what worldly recognition do we act like we just can't live without? You know, when we eat in a good restaurant, our kids usually aren't interested in that food. So what I found is the lower quality restaurant we eat in, we all eat the same thing. But the higher quality restaurant, then there's this big disparity. But those restaurants have a child's menu, right? Because children don't like good food. Sounds bad. So what happens is, you know, if I'm eating lobster, this makes it sound like we're very wealthy. All the times where I'm eating lobster, or Maria's eating steak, the kids are eating corn dogs and macaroni and cheese, right? At these restaurants. That's the kind of drop-off that we're talking about here between what God has to offer and what the world has to offer. C.S. Lewis says it this way. It's an essay called The Weight of Glory. It's great. This is what he says. He says, "We are like ignorant children who want to go on making mud pies in a slum." So in a ghetto, mud pies in a slum. "Because we cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased." That's what Jesus is talking about here. So he says, don't settle for immediate worldly recognition because it's not good enough. Verse 8, "When you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by him. And he who invited you both will come and say to you, 'Give your place to this person.' And then you will, with shame, take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, move up higher.' Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Let's pray.